I'm going to go and I feel like I'm going to be in a room with TypeScript fans.
You are going
That's why I told Austin it would be okay. We'll be JS bros. They're all like, fuck this. We like JavaScript.
Yeah. You just
What's
be
wrong
like,
with JavaScript?
Just be like, Blake fucking hates TypeScript. We're not doing this shit.
That dude loves JavaScript more than anybody I know.
Looking up circuit bending Furbies.
I haven't heard that episode yet, so I have as little context as you do. So now I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I would listen to that.
Yeah, as we talked about space junk for a little bit. Like,
Is that why stuff in space was up on the computer over here?
Yes.
I was looking up space junk earlier myself. I didn't know why, but it was here, and I was like, oh, look at all that shit in space.
Yeah, exactly.
Wait, like literal shit?
Well, maybe no, like debris,
just you know, like dead. Well, not yet.
I got excited. Yeah. I mean,
that's out there. So that's out there too. Yeah. I assume when they empty the can,
right?
On
like
the
what
space station, I'm pretty sure they send that on a disintegrating orbit into the atmosphere.
Yeah,
touche. It's probably there.
Yeah.
I love the just the idea of ejecting poop at escape velocity. I had a mind blowing.
Remember in Apollo 13 where they eject the pee into outer space,
and the he's like, "It's constellation Urine."
I still have not seen that
Apollo 13.
I know.
We're gonna have to watch. I think we're gonna have to do an office watch of
it's
Apollo.
Bad. It's bad when I judge somebody for having not seen a movie.
Is there a DVD player at the Airbnb? There's got to be a something there that we can
there's
put a video
something.
On.
There's like 9 TVs. We're staying in a swanky estate in Austin for the conference.
Is that next week?
Yeah, next week.
Nice.
Yeah. Next week for us. Next week for us. Yesterday for those listening right now.
Yeah.
You're coming, right, Blake?
No.
Yeah, you said he got tickets to ViewConf.
No. Oh, I was in until I saw the tickets were $1,000. Yeah. And then I was not in.
Yeah. I'm putting off watching the View documentary though until like I'm on the way.
Oh, you're gonna watch it on the plane?
I was gonna get hyped up about it. Then
there's an Ember one too. I heard.
Oh,
by
God.
The same people who did the View.
Oh no,
I might watch both.
That one's more like an episode of Intervention. It's like, man, we love you like crazy, but if you don't stop. Yeah. Our relationship is going to change in the following ways.
Yeah, I saw an article about creating something with the newest version of Ember, and
there's a new version of Ember. They finally came out with Ember 3.
Yeah, what like it was? Ember Octane or whatever. And
don't they know that we're moving to electric vehicles?
Yeah,
call it Octane.
Yeah.
I'm
probably gonna see what it's about. I mean, might as well like see.
I'll watch any fucking programming documentary.
Yeah,
I don't have to like the framework. It's just like
my favorite are old vintage ones, really.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. If you're gonna make content that panders to that part of me, I'm in.
Yeah,
I'll watch a fucking documentary on Pascal. Actually, that would probably be pretty interesting.
That actually.
Let me think of a better example. I'd watch a documentary on Cake PHP.
Yeah,
just to see it. I wrote some Cake PHP.
Yeah.
And some code igniter.
I instantly thought of all of that and was just like, would I watch a documentary about that? I might.
Good documentary I watched on our flight to Salt Lake City week before last was a documentary on the car manufacturer that made the Gullwing door. Why is my brain?
DeLorean.
DeLorean documentary is awesome.
Oh, I have seen that. That is fascinating with how it's such an iconic car.
Yeah.
But the business failed miserably.
The business failed and DeLorean went to prison because he tried to bail his company out with a drug deal.
Yeah.
And he was not a drug dealer.
Yeah.
He was just a desperate dude that knew one guy that was like, maybe drug money can be how I fund this thing out of the hole. I'll give it a shot. And on the first fucking attempt, he was talking to a DEA agent.
Man.
Yeah, so it's good. It tells the whole background of his growth through GM, Chrysler, and Pontiac. and then starting the DeLorean company, and then they intertwine in it reenactments, and he's played by Alec Baldwin. So it's got Alec Baldwin doing reenactments, actual like interview, historical style documentary, and then also side documentary of Alec Baldwin getting in the character and talking about playing it. So it's like these three different things that are all melded together, and it's really good.
Is it on like Netflix?
I have no idea. It's on GoGo In-Flight Entertainment for Delta.
Okay,
I know that for sure. All right. So if you catch that Tulsa to Salt Lake City flight, it's on.
It'll
your phone.
Be on there. Yeah, all right.
That's okay. How I also watched, ironically, Ford versus Ferrari.
Mm. Also a really good movie. I
still need to see that.
I haven't seen that one.
And Hellboy. That was.
What'd you think of the new?
What'd you think? Really, I heard that it was horrible. So.
Well, that's why I said it's better than I thought it
would. Yeah.
So it was okay.
I wouldn't say it was horrible, but it
wasn't great.
It wasn't
okay.
Guillermo del Toro.
All right.
So I got two things to say about airplanes.
Okay. You've been on them a lot lately.
I've been on them a lot lately, and we were there just now, and I'm taking it back. First of all, Alan, I was telling you about this the other day. I had my mind blown. Mm-hmm. I've flown a lot. One of my favorite ways to fly is a night flight on a clear sky because you can see all of the lights and stuff, right?
Yep.
And so I was flying to XNA from Houston Wednesday night, and clear sky, and I could see, after we got up to cruising altitude, I could see out my window a big city kind of on the horizons. We're coming up to it. And I was like putting it all together because that's what I like to do, is I like to watch and go, what is that? Where am I?
Yep.
And I was like, I'm pretty sure that's DFW. I'm pretty sure that's Dallas. And so I watched it and it's massive. And I was like, it's got to be Dallas, like for how much time we've been in the air. We got to the point where we were just over Dallas. Like I could look out the window and backward and I could still see Dallas behind me. And I saw two also large blobs on the horizon. Like out what would be like north and north east of Dallas from there. And I'm like, well, what the fuck could that be? Because I could see them at the same time. I could see all three blobs at once looking out the window of the airplane. And I'm like, that's not like suburbs of Dallas. There's a lot of space in between it. But what the hell is there between Dallas and Oklahoma City that I can see? And as we got pretty close to the second blob, the engines cut for descent. And I'm like, holy shit. I'm pretty sure in an airplane, you can see Oklahoma City from Dallas, totally blew my mind.
Yeah.
My scale was all messed up. Like flying in an airplane, I would see like a city that I recognize and I'd be like, that must be a suburb.
Right.
No, that's the next major city, 6 hours by car away, or 4 hours, however long it is, Oklahoma City. Yeah. So I looked it up, and at 35,000 feet, line of sight to the horizon is 290 miles.
Wow.
So if you've ever wondered when you're flying, like what you're seeing.
It's 300 miles away.
Yeah, it's 300 miles away, which is pretty incredible.
That is cool. The cool flight experience I had like that was my first one, actually. And it was an early morning flight, like the first one coming out of XNA.
That 445 bastard.
Yeah, that's the one. I was barely aware I was getting on an airplane.
So was the pilot.
Yes.
Well, let that comfort you.
Yeah. But the sunrise, though, was amazing.
Sunrise on
and we were headed east.
Yeah.
That was really amazing.
I like the one on a cloudy night with the moon over the tops of the clouds.
That's cool, too.
Yeah, that is cool.
It's always fun. When we took off heading down on our way out, when we left XNA, it was overcast.
Oh, yeah.
That was fun flying through the clouds and then blue sky and sun, you know.
Yeah. That's always that always freaks me out.
Yeah, that's the way it was to Denver, and it's like it's getting so bright because of the whiteness of the clouds
and the sunlight. Yeah.
You look out and it hurts your eyes a little bit. Like, yeah, that is a little freaky.
Yeah, and then you land and it's like, oh, it's cloudy.
Yeah,
sad.
But yeah, I saw the space junk thing, and the view of the Earth from orbit made me think of that. So that's my one airplane thing. My second airplane thing is we're going down for ViewConf. For those of you listening, we went down for ViewConf, and maybe we made it. We'll see if the plane crashed.
Maybe we made it back. Yeah,
all on different flights.
Austin's flying separate.
Right now, okay.
Yeah,
actually.
Yeah, he's out there now.
Austin's on his way right now.
But Tyrell's had a quest for a while. You talked about your Oculus Quest for a bit on the last episode. I got one for my birthday.
Oh, is that? So I saw it in your office.
Yeah, I brought it up to work today, and that's what I did for my lunch break.
Nice.
Slay Vader. But the Tyrell was telling me there's a growing syndicate of people who are trying out using this as in-flight entertainment
on the plane.
And so I was like, I'm doing that. And so I'm pretty sure Tyrell and I are both going to be wearing Quests on this flight to Austin. And people are going to be like, what the
What's great is we just need to be like, hey, excuse me, do you mind trading seats? Because I'm going to be plugged into the Oasis, and so is that guy. So
it might make sense if we're just sitting here together.
You are cool with
that way. If we bump each other with our hand controllers, we're only pissing each other off.
Oh, I don't know what it's like if our hand tracking would. I wonder if our hand tracking would overlap.
I don't know.
Oh, what is
we should try that out.
What is the battery life on the thing like?
It depends on what you're doing. Yeah, yeah. If you're beating the graphics card up, I browsed the web for. Probably an hour and a half last night on it, watching YouTube and stuff.
Yeah.
And probably burned through half the battery on that. Yeah. But I burned through the entire battery in like a probably a 1 hour session on like a graphically intensive
game. If you're gaming hardcore, you'll burn through it in an hour.
Yeah.
But the cord it ships with, I've found, I've used it several times plugged in.
They intentionally, so there's two things that they did to kind of mitigate liability. They said, don't use this plugged in and charging, and then gave you an exceptionally long
with a 90-degree turn at the top, so it's not sticking straight out the side.
And then they also said, don't use this outside. And then everyone talks about how great it is to use it outside. You can't do it on sunny days. But like
messes with the tracking, I imagine. I didn't think about that when we were basically, we were going to bed last night, and I was like, I'm not taking this off because I just opened it yesterday, so I'm still in the new toy phase.
That's great.
And so I went to bed wearing it like I got new shoes that day, you know, and wore them out of the store. And when we shut all the lights off, it's like, oh, you don't have head tracking in a dark room, but you can still watch YouTube, Netflix, stuff like that. Yeah. So.
That's
it's all pretty sweet. I'm 100% in.
Is there adult entertainment on these things?
I'm sure.
Yeah, probably. They put it on.
I'm curious
with a screen.
What that's like. Yeah. Like on a couple different levels.
There's someone you know.
Okay. All right.
That you should ask about it.
He was very passionate.
I recall him having very strong opinions.
Google
Cardboard coming to the office and someone saying no, seriously, you got to try.
If I remember right, Casey and I didn't even work for Lofty yet, but Casey and I had to decline that offer.
Yeah. It's I'm straight.
All right. I'm gonna find out. For science.
So, I'm a big fan of the Quest. I was really impressed, actually, with just the experience of using it as a video player and using it as a web browser.
Yeah.
It is far superior to laying in bed browsing the internet on your phone.
Yeah.
Your arm doesn't go numb.
Right, yeah.
You don't drop it on your face.
Yep.
And there's no ambient light for, you know, your spouse who's in bed next to you sleeping.
That's the key.
I'm locked in, and I'm watching videos at full brightness and not worried about, am I getting the light in your eyes and stuff like that.
Yep.
It was pretty rad. Put some headphones on, you're in.
With the original Pixel, if you pre-ordered it, you got their the one that you put the phone in.
Yeah.
And that was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
It was the same.
It's like that for sure.
Yeah.
It's the scale is different though for the Oculus. Because of the size of the phone screen doesn't translate necessarily. That is immersive, but Oculus, just watching YouTube videos.
Yeah.
If there's a close up of another person, you feel like there is a human-sized person in front of you. It's really good.
Nice.
That's the crazy thing about Vader Immortal. I still can't get over it. And I noticed something about this.
Which one?
When I first played it on yours, I talked about just the... When in the opening series, when they board your ship, and the stormtroopers in your face, the admiral, it comes in, and then
it's
Vader
intimidating,
comes in.
Yeah.
Vader gets right in your face, and it's like you feel yourself backing away. I said it at the time, I was like, they made sure that motherfucker was a foot and a half taller than you.
Absolutely.
I went back and replayed that scene last night. And I was kind of moving around the room, and I realized as I kind of stretched and tippy-toed and stuff like that, I was moving in relation to it. Vader's a foot and a half taller than me. He may not be a foot and a half taller than you. I'm a short dude, for our listeners who don't know. And so that actually, I'm sure they made him very tall. He's extra tall for me. It's like me looking up at the real Darth Vader. Your height off the floor is translated into the actual game.
Right. Yeah. No, they that's one of the things. When you turn it on, they first say set the floor level. So you like look down. And if the dots don't look like they're actually on the floor, they have you reach down and touch the floor. So you set floor, and then at that point, they know how tall you are.
Where the headset is off the ground.
Yeah, and then they'll set a guardian around it, and they will adjust things to
Before you leave, I want you to meet Darth Vader on the quest today.
Okay.
So you can have that experience.
It really is an impressive experience.
Okay.
And they do such a good job with the lighting in that.
Yep.
Like, most of the atmospheres are very, very dark, so they do some really cool stuff because it's full immersive, so you get real dark in there. Like, but then there'll be like light bouncing off the floors, and you can just barely see it, and it's just like it's so well done. So we'll be on an airplane having that moment, and hopefully I'm over it enough that I'm not doing to whoever is sitting next to me what I was doing to Paige on the couch last night, just being like, no, you don't understand. Like, you got it. You got to try this. Hang on. You don't want to wear it right now? Okay, but holy shit, this is crazy. No, let me explain. And I just would not shut up. I was like, this is the future, and it changes everything. You just got to see it. She still hasn't tried it yet.
She was like, that's kind of how my wife was. She was like,
I drove her nuts. I think she might actually like it. She just didn't want to take my new toy away.
Sure.
I think.
Yeah. She probably did enjoy seeing your happiness, your yes. obvious happiness.
Yes.
Yeah.
Paige is a very practical gift giver.
Mm.
I was shocked when I opened that. Really? I was like, oh, for fucking real? Sweet. She's never gotten me anything electronic before, which is, you know, with a tech person in your house, that's a tough gift.
It is.
Right?
Yeah. It is.
I don't presume to buy her things that are like her hobbies that I am not very well versed in.
Right.
You know,
right.
You don't buy like a woodworker a tool. Buying their tools is like part of the fun part of it.
Yeah, exactly.
But she knocked it out of the park on this one. It's like, man.
Yeah, we do the whole like, no. Tell me exactly what you want.
For Christmas last year, we're just like, what do we both want? Let's buy that and call it Christmas to each other.
That's what we
got
did
a new set of pots and pans. And we're like, yes, that was Christmas. That's how we do it.
That's like life changing too. A nice set of pots and pans.
Holy shit!
Yeah,
you got some good ones.
Yeah,
you got some all clad.
No, ours are like the I don't even know what brand they are, but we got them like I want to say 5 or 6 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And it's actually funny. I got them. Well, maybe it might even be longer than that. It was when I worked at Nielsen.
Yeah.
And they did a thing where, you know, as a reward, you could go and get XYZ from this site, and the rewards were different tiers.
Oh, right.
And so at one point I got an award, and so one of the options was a really nice set of pots and pans, and it's lasted years.
Dude, it is game changing in the kitchen.
Yeah.
We bought a set of all clad last year, stainless steel, and they are phenomenal. It's awesome.
It's pretty awesome.
What kind of pots and pans do you use, listeners?
tell us.
What do you fry up your eggs and angular code in the mornings?
I hope a cast iron.
Cast iron is good too.
If you're gonna do eggs,
we got a good set of classic cast iron as well.
If you're gonna do eggs, you gotta do cast iron.
I will change your mind on that. In as much as I do eggs in a cast iron pan too, but there's a specifically great style of egg called a crispy egg that you have to get searing hot in a stainless steel pan.
I know of these amazing crispy eggs. Yes. Also, like a hash.
Like a potato hash?
Yeah, in a fucking I was looking,
Alan's head was like, bro, that's not how you hash. Yeah. No cast iron.
Not that hash.
No, I mean, sometimes use a a hair straightener or something. Some oil, really.
The potato variety of hash with eggs.
But I agree. I know what you're talking about with stainless steel cooking taters. Like, that's what they're actually called, Blake.
Taters.
Taters.
Good old taters. Anything that you can take from the stovetop directly into the oven is a big game changer.
Yes.
There's a lot of shit that if you don't have good oven safe, like stovetop pans, there's a lot of dishes that you are unable to do.
Yeah.
Like yeah. a fucking reverse-seared steak.
I was about to say a reverse-seared steak, dude. Mm-hmm.
Oh. Yes.
Man, you guys are making me hungry.
Yeah. This is our food here. Segment. Yeah. Yeah, it's, yeah.
I skipped lunch today to play my quest, so. Oh, I see. I'm hungry.
I see.
Yeah.
Blake, how do you feel about TypeScript?
You know how I feel about TypeScript.
Yeah. I just wanted to confirm that and make sure nothing had changed. That was the thing. Austin had sent me a message, a little screenshot of the workshop we're doing that they're like, we're not going to force you to use TypeScript, but we're all going to be writing TypeScript. Mm. Oh. And you could really benefit from it is what we're saying. So, yeah.
So no.
Are you guys doing a testing? Like, is it a testing workshop?
Yeah.
The whole workshop is going to be like, bro, doing TypeScript. You don't have to write tests because it's all statically typed.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
End of workshop.
I'm a Python backend developer, so I don't care about types. Like, I get how that bothers these C# developers where they're all like, oh, now I need types in my front end. But yeah, I was just like, oh, gross, get Angular out of my view. What is that?
I have a couple stories about this from recently, actually.
Oh, okay.
Lay them on us.
Yeah. So recently I had this idea of something that I wanted to make and I was like, oh, you know, it's been a while. I keep going back to the well because in my head, I always tell myself like, maybe it's better. Maybe you'll change your mind. And because people that like TypeScript are very zealous. Mm. And so I'm constantly like doubting, like, am I just like,
am
what's,
I missing
like,
out?
What's wrong with me? What do I not get? And so about every 6 months, I'll try it again. Mm. And so I had that experience recently.
Gotcha.
And I got everything set up, and with React now, it's like if you're using if you're not using like Create React App or whatever, it's super easy to set it up. So I was like, okay, got that going, you know, started going along, and then there's this the way that I like to write CSS, and no one's gonna be surprised by this, but I write my CSS in the JavaScript, and I use. I use a syntax of the way that I write it is the same exact way. If you
jQuery dot style, is that the syntax?
No. It's like the React Native style.
Oh.
So it's like a JavaScript object.
Yeah.
And that gets translated into styles.
Right.
And why do I like that? Because I just did so much React Native, I got used to it and really liked it.
Hey, you could totally do that in Vue because Vue lets you pass in CSS classes as a prop to a component, and so you could totally just store that somewhere else.
Yeah,
but yeah. I've been doing that more and more.
Yeah, and so there's a library that I like to use to do this called Emotion.
Oh, okay.
And it's the one that allows you to do this, and I like it. And so I installed that. I'm like, I'm going to do this, and then it got to the point where like I was like, oh, I'm going to need types for this, and so I was like. Using I Googled Emotion and TypeScript in a React app. And I started reading through it, and I was like, fuck this. Delete project, start over.
Been there. I love that. Rage quit.
And it was like, oh, I could spend, you know, an hour, 2 hours getting this to fucking work, or I could just start building shit.
Just start writing some code.
Yeah, exactly.
And that is always, like, one of my fucking biggest complaints with TypeScript is like the setup part of TypeScript fucking sucks.
Yeah.
And a lot of my really poor experiences with it were in Node. Mm. And like for whatever reason, for a long time, it was really uncommon to have types for Node like open source projects.
Right.
You would have them more on the front end. They would be there. But if you wanted to do like an API and you wanted to use some library, they wouldn't be there. And I had a couple experiences where they had types, but the types were fucking wrong, which is also infuriating.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was just like, not worth. Like, the benefits don't outweigh this shit that I'm gonna have to deal with.
That's kind of how I feel about
fully
it.
Fully agree. Yeah. I am not against statically typed languages.
Right.
Not against that at all.
But I'm gonna compile it one time. I don't want to write a typed language to transpile to JavaScript to transpile or compile to machine code.
The ass backward of that puts us in a world where someone can use the phrase that Blake just used, which is the types were wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which can't actually happen in a real statically typed language.
Yeah.
It would have never compiled in the first place.
That's right. Right.
Because it's not, it's, you know, it's not actually statically typed, it's validation.
It's
a code linter.
It's like a very intense linter.
I love the fashion.
I'm pretty sure there's one out there. I'm pretty sure there's one out there that will do this for Python, because Python has the annotated types that
type hinting.
Yes, type whispering. Yeah, the interpreter. Yeah, because the interpreter disregards it. Of course, it doesn't care. But you could get some third party interpreter or something out there that would scan your code and throw up validation errors.
I think once you apply type hints, you might be able to do some introspection on the variable itself. So you could write programmatic code that does stuff with the types. Mm. But at the interpreter level, it doesn't do jack shit.
No, it doesn't care.
And it really is type whispering.
Yeah. And one of the first things I liked about Python and JavaScript, for that matter, was like, I don't have to figure out what type this is. Awesome.
Yeah. And the thing about, you know, people that I think really enjoy TypeScript, they're a lot of times they come from a language like C# that is, you know,
statically typed.
But the other thing is, you know, they always bring up this argument of like, it's good for teams and the tool chain is nice or whatever. And I was like, okay, the tool chain's pretty nice, but you can get like 90% of that without TypeScript, like of that the tool chain that they're referencing.
I just don't see that as a good faith argument.
Yeah, no.
That's a weird one to me. It's just like, look at how nice this conveyor belt is. Like, yeah, but I don't need my shit to go over there. Like, but it's a nice conveyor belt.
Yeah.
Look how smooth it is.
Like, one of my really good friends really likes it. And we have had several, like, sometimes heated arguments about it.
Mm.
Because from his perspective, he thinks, like, well, it's just better. Why wouldn't you use it if it's better? And I'm like, because it sucks. It's not better. And so I think, you know, I don't begrudge anyone that does like it, but for me personally, it is not for me.
Yeah.
And to your point earlier, Casey, I don't have a problem with statically typed languages. I'll use them. Like, you know, I think on here,
I actually quite enjoy it.
You like
it.
Rust.
I'm a huge proponent of Rust.
Yeah.
And it's very strongly typed.
Very strongly. Like, is this an 8-bit? Unsigned integer?
Exactly, yeah.
Or do I need a 16-bit one?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to do some operations on it. I better go 32 or 64.
Exactly, And I have no problem with that. It makes sense in the context of what you're doing.
And Russ has got a great compiler that will even tell you, like, hey, I think you meant to do this.
Yeah.
And then you can paste that in there and go, okay.
So many good things about Rust.
I've got to get in there and try.
Dude, do a Hello World. It's not bad.
You have a quest now. Programming is for
people.
people who don't get to go to the Oasis. Programming in your free time.
Those of you who are soul bound to the physical realm can play with your Rust code.
Yes,
we will be in the ephemeral plane.
All discretionary time and income now go to virtual worlds.
I can't believe how much this shit costs.
Indeed,
God, it's gonna hurt my wallet.
Well, now I would argue, like, if you're smart about it, it's not so bad, because there's a lot of $10 and $20 games
for sure
that are well worth it.
I get it. I totally do. I guess I'm trying to get myself mentally. I walked into it expecting phone app prices, and the actual price is somewhere between it's closer to phone app prices, but there are $30 and $40 titles on the store, and it's like, I don't know if I'm going to get a Skyrim level of entertainment out of this here. like a console title, I guess, is what I'm thinking of.
You're not going to get hundreds of hours out of something, most likely.
Like Vader Immortal, super fun. First chapter, you beat it in like 15 minutes.
But it's $10.
It's 10 bucks. Mm. Yeah. But it's 10 bucks for 15 minutes. That's a for it, translating that to feature films, that is an $80 movie ticket.
Do you let me direct you to the dojo,
I will play the dojo. Yeah.
You can be an actual Jedi. Yeah.
The dojo's fun. Look, I'm would talking work out,
shit, but
I would work out that way.
I just confessed at lunch I played it. I own it. I paid for it. but that doesn't mean I haven't fully forfeited my right to bitch about the price, right?
Yeah,
fair enough.
Dude, I'm living that Xbox X life right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And on the subscription to get the new Xbox next year when that comes out.
I support you in this.
Thank you.
I'm trying to think about what happens to my Xbox now.
Yeah.
Because I'm like Tyrell. I kind of go all in on one thing as gaming. And I haven't done PC gaming in a long time. So I had an Xbox and I was happy with that.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't want to build a fucking new computer every 2 years to keep up with this shit. I just want to go on the store and download a game and it's going to run on my hardware. And I like that. Yeah. I don't know if there's room in my life to have a Quest and also actually spend time with my Xbox.
Right.
Because I don't spend that much time gaming. I'm like, I get like maybe 3 hours a week out of it, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going to happen to it, but I was hard on like going after the new Xbox series. Mm-hmm. I wanted to do what you did, upgrade to the X and stuff. But I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, if you went that route, I don't know either. I don't know because I was on the fence about that for a little bit, but then I thought about all the Xbox games that I got and I got a new 4K TV. And we're just like,
That's part of the problem is it cascades and actually have not upgraded to 4K. At
right.
So that would happen.
So I just felt dumb not getting a Xbox X at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Yeah.
I do have a 4K monitor in my drum studio, and I thought about, I might hook up an Xbox to this, and then Paige would leave me because I would never leave my office.
Yeah.
I'd call you guys and be like, so we're full remote now.
What's that noise in the background? Yeah. You don't hear anything.
I've locked myself in my office. And
I've got my Quest on. I'm in Guardian mode so I can see my screen in front of me while I'm wearing my Quest and playing my Xbox on my
That's amazing.
So I don't know. I don't know what to do about it. We'll see how long before I want to go back and play a console game. Mm. But right now, I'm all in on the Quest, obviously.
Yeah.
So do you think that at that price that you mentioned, $15,
$10? $10 to $30.
Okay.
Is where the span is. So average it at 20.
So $10 for a game, but a console game, typically if you buy it when it first released, $60.
Yes.
And if it is a game like, you mentioned Skyrim, hundreds of people worked on this game.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like the amount of time that it takes to create one of these virtual experiences is like reflected in that price? Do you think it takes that many more people for that amount of time or that amount of content? Or do you think that it's just like they're playing into the Star Wars thing and it probably didn't take them very long? And
I do think, well, I think there's two things there, because this is actually getting into it. I'll explain that later.
Oh,
but,
good.
But the person,
as long
who walked,
as you know,
the person that, who walked by is authorized to be.
As long as you're okay with it, then I'm okay with it.
Yeah, yeah.
I missed it. I assumed it was someone who belongs here.
Well, our good friend from across the hall is going to be hot desking with us.
Oh, yeah.
And so
I
set him up a desk in the corner. He's going to bring some stuff over. So.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So this kind of is an economics conversation at some level.
Yeah.
Because I do feel like the price is justified. In fact, for those like indie game developers, Invader Unlimited is not an indie game developer. That's coming from that's done by Disney, and I mean they contracted out the development,
right, but
that is done through a AAA title.
EA have any part of that? Because I know now EA owns.
So.
I wonder how they worked around that, because I know EA has like sole rights to Star Wars
games.
And that's why.
I'm not sure.
There's like three. They did Battlefront because they were like, nobody wants to play an adventure game in Star Wars in an open world. Who would want to fucking do that?
No one, obviously.
Yes, yes. And then Battlefront 2, where they're like, okay, now we gave you a silly little story in there. Are you happy with that?
There you go. You got a campaign.
Yeah. Then finally, they released Jedi Fallen Order, which Jedi Fallen Order 2 has been confirmed Bacon is in production.
So happy about that.
I know.
But I think that for like the smaller indie developers, the price point is, first of all, they're not operating at the same scale. So they're making less money on that $10 game than a major studio is, because they're not they don't have the economy of scale to build it. It's more expensive to build per cap, like per person in a smaller shop. And then also the audience that they're selling to, they're not blasting out a major marketing budget. Like at some point, the production cost of a Skyrim, right, is like when you look at what it costs to produce it and then how much they make in revenue on it, they are far more profitable with a game like that than a $10 app store game, even if it was only one or two people working on it.
Right.
But it's just, that's a scale thing. So
I don't know. What about
I think the price point is totally justified as far as like, what did it cost them to make it? And are they charging like on a cost basis? Are they charging an appropriate price? I think that's probably very accurate. It's a value question for me. Am I going to get $10?
Sure. And that's not where I'm trying to, certainly I'm not trying to say that it's an unfair price. I'm trying to just get opinions on like where, like, I don't know. I guess I'm just curious, because, you know, to your point, Skyrim, super wildly successful,
right?
Like on every fucking platform ever known to man.
Yeah. And then they went out and sold it twice. Everyone who bought it again. I'm one of them.
Exactly. Yep, yeah.
Me too.
So I almost think that's almost a unrealistic.
Where was the second purchase?
The new edition.
Definitive edition or whatever.
They refinished it. So to speak.
Bethesda owns y'all.
I'm happy about that.
I knew better. I plugged into, Fallout after watching a friend of mine lose most of his life to Morrowind.
Oh, yeah.
And I saw the faces and I went like, I've seen those kinds of faces before.
And
I noped out. But carry on.
I've
got to go attend to some.
Yeah. Put out some fires. Assistance. Yeah, there you go.
Okay. All right.
I'll be back.
Much appreciated.
So, yeah.
CD Projekt Red and Bethesda own my soul, and I'm okay with that.
I don't know. Bethesda has I want to talk about something
except
else
for
first.
Fallout 76. Like, what the fuck, Bethesda? Yeah. never do any shit like that again.
So a game, let's think of a different game. That one that is not like that crazy. So
Super Mario Brothers,
also way too crazy.
Sorry,
Fallen Order is a good example. Actually, I feel like so Fallen Order versus like a Flappy Bird.
Mm.
Okay,
Flappy Bird.
Yeah,
like $3.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But wildly successful,
right?
Mm-hmm. A lot more people played Flappy Birds,
right?
Yeah,
and that was like definitely not very many people. So the margin, I bet, on Flappy Bird was like,
oh, totally
significantly higher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So here's my other question: is Fallen Order a game that takes, let's say, 20 hours ish?
Yeah, yeah, I'd say, yeah.
And then you have a game like Skyrim or Witcher, Witcher 3, that takes 200 hours to do everything.
Yeah.
They're both $60. Mm-hmm. How does that work?
Mm. I'll go back to this, and I don't mean to belabor it, but I think it's actually an economics question, because you're comparing them on a cost basis.
Sure.
Right, of what it costs to produce it, but people are buying it on a value basis of, am I getting $60 worth of value out of it?
Totally.
And like, it's a crazy thing. And like, there is a sweet spot, like the most profitable sweet spot is delivering an exceptional value relative to what it costs to produce it. Mm. Yeah. Doesn't mean it's expensive, but like, you go into like pharmaceuticals and talk about like prescription drugs, where it's like, it costs like, this drug we sell for X dollars, the cost to produce it is less than 1% of the cost it sells at.
Right.
But it cures, you know, or it treats cancer.
Yeah.
Therefore, it's providing immense value. And so we're going to sell it for extortionate money because we're soulless pieces of shit.
Yeah.
That's my personal opinion. But that wasn't clear. but that's kind of what it is. And so like Flappy Bird is an easy $3 purchase.
Yeah.
And it cost them nothing to make it, and people just spend it like, I got my $3 out of it. And they hit a sweet spot there where it was more profitable to do. They made more relative to what they invested to produce it,
sure,
they made way more money than than Skyrim made.
Yeah,
relative to the cost of
producing. Yeah, the volume
the margin that they made.
Yeah, and it did. It took way less time to get there, I'm sure.
Yep. And so you can kind of look at it. To me, if I'm taking this motif way too far, you can almost look at the production of a game as an investment. And there are some investments are better than others.
Yep.
You might build this game and you know, put $50 million into it, make $100 million back. Hey, you doubled your money.
Yeah.
And you might build this other game and put $50 million into it, and you get $75 million back. Okay, you got a 50% gain. Mm-hmm. It wasn't as good as the other game's gain, right, but it was still a pretty solid investment strategy, air quotes, if you will, mm-hmm, to increase your return by 25%.
Yeah, I think what... I think the other part of that I'm trying to, I definitely agree with you. It's the value of the product. But like the thing about console games or PC games is there's typically only one price. It's not like,
It's true.
Yeah. It's not like some games are like, oh, well, we'll charge $80 because we think it's like more. It's like always $60.
Console games and PC games have been that way. The app stores have upended that. Because now you have a spectrum. There's an app for like phone app stores. This thing is 10 times as much as that thing. You never saw that when you went to Walmart or wherever back in the day before you download a game. You went to Best Buy and you went to buy a console game, and you can go back as far as you want. A PlayStation game and an N64 game,
same price.
Two totally different systems, two totally different games, same fucking price.
Yeah,
that's just what a video game costs.
Except now I feel like they are trying to do this, but they're doing it in a different way. Like they have like the limited edition, and you get these assets that took us 2 days to create.
Yeah. Yeah. We took the hat and we rendered it a different color.
Right,
that'll be $75.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I feel like
in 6 months we'll just start giving it away in a loot crate anyway.
Yeah, and I feel like they're trying to get there, but then games that isn't even necessarily a benefit for. Do the same thing. Like I would argue that actually Jedi Fallen Order is one of those games that like had that shit, but the cosmetics in that game were horrible, except for the changing the color of the robot, which was cool.
Yeah,
but changing the color of the ship, which you never fucking saw.
Yeah,
changing the color of your fucking poncho.
The poncho
was so many the worst.
And only a poncho is the thing.
I took it off. Like I never put it back on.
I sport the one that has the flying critter on your back from Kashyyyk. The free Kashyyyk one. I like that one. But yeah, I was a little disappointed at that. But like, you know, all that got overshadowed with, but this is the best Star Wars game like 10 years.
Yeah, the game like, was great. That part though was like... that was probably the biggest disappointment for me was that part of the game. But everything else, man, fucking love that game.
Yeah, gameplay is so spot fun. On. Yeah.
I still haven't played it.
Dude, you're missing out.
I know.
Yeah,
I need to go get it.
It's tons of fun.
That will be the thing that brings me back to my Xbox.
Yeah.
But see, that's what gives me hope for like the second one, though. I feel like they're going to listen to all of that.
I hope
that.
So. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you beat the game?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I won't say anything.
Yeah, no spoilers,
but the fight at the end, dude, took me so goddamn long.
Yeah,
I was playing it on like not the hardest difficulty, but like the next to hardest.
Mm-hmm. That's the way I'm doing The Witcher. Through Blood and Wine is what I'm working through right now, and I'm on. It's like
I've had a craving lately to go back and play that one.
It's understandable. Reading it's everywhere right too, now, right? Too. Like, yeah, yeah. Yeah. And it's like there's people I can actually talk about it. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. We're both reading The Witcher books.
Oh, got it. Yeah. Yeah.
Too. So, which they are fantastic.
They are.
I've also been reading. So, I think last time we talked about books.
You're on a reading kick.
Dude.
Yeah.
Huge.
You still knocking out 2 books a week or whatever it was?
Dude. I'm
still what was going. Your rate?
I had 6 done by the middle of like January, pretty much.
So you were doing 3 a week at that point.
Yeah, I'm not quite that fast, but I'm definitely I'm doing like 4 a month. So 1 a week.
1 a week?
Is like the pace that I'm going now. So I finished a book called, have you guys seen the movie Arrival?
No.
With Amy Adams?
Yes. I even saw.
Not surprised.
I don't see movies. That's why I
saw the first one that had, Martin Sheen's son in it. God.
Charlie Sheen,
yeah.
That would be the guy.
Yeah.
There was a... Wait.
Yeah, and the aliens, like, their legs went backwards in it. Yeah.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah.
Anyway, so that movie, or those movies, I didn't know the Charlie Sheen one, those were based on a short story written by a guy named Ted Chiang. And he has this book full of short stories, and they're very like unique dystopian type of short stories and worlds that he's created. Reminds me of like a written form of almost like the Animatrix type thing. Not so sci-fi. There's a huge variance, but just fucking like amazing, enthralling. It was so good.
I'll check that out, because like short stories I really love and have since I've entered the workforce. Basically, like the first one I discovered was H.P. Lovecraft, and was like, oh, this is awesome, like I can read this in an evening, and then I feel like, cool, I read the whole story, now I can go to bed and move on to the next day.
And the other one that I'm in the middle of right now is The Lost City of the Monkey God, which is nonfiction.
Really? Yes. With a title like that.
Yeah.
Even the story, and some of like, I could read as fiction. Like, it's that good of a story. And it's a journalist from National Geographic that wrote it. And it's about this area in Honduras that was one of the last places on Earth, I guess, on land, that had not really been explored.
Oh, gotcha.
There, you know, sort of legends and stories about the civilization and the city that was there, or whatever, and all of these attempts over the past couple centuries to like get there and see it. And man, super interesting.
Yeah,
love that.
Sounds
shit.
Good.
Yeah, that's really good. That is easy read too.
See, I much prefer nonfiction to fiction.
I do too.
Which is why I have seen 5 documentaries in the last in the last month, and I've seen 0 like pop culture films in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
It's not lost on me that I don't watch movies, which is why I was so shocked when Tyrell hadn't seen Apollo 13.
Right, yeah.
When I'm scolding you for having not seen a movie, it's bad.
Yeah.
It's bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're going to have to fucking... That also hurts me, because that is one of my favorite movies.
Yeah, same. That's in my top 20. That's in my top 20.
There's so much good about that movie.
Yeah.
I saw... You will not have seen this, but I'm going to make this recommendation.
You don't know that. I'll surprise you everyone.
Okay, all right. Jojo Rabbit?
No, I haven't seen that.
Okay. Heard about it. Willow was telling me about it.
Fucking so good.
That's what she said. She said it wasn't what you expect.
No.
Yeah, okay.
So the setting, do you know the setting?
I do.
You probably don't.
I do not.
It's set in Nazi Germany.
Yep.
Okay.
And that's all I'm going to say.
Well, okay.
It's about a kid.
Okay.
Hitler youth, right?
Yeah, Hitler youth.
Yeah. Okay. I just wanted to.
Yeah, ScarJo's in it.
Okay.
Fucking fantastic. I know that, like, just saying that, like, what it's about, that's very short and vague synopsis gives certain connotations, but like, it is not what you expect.
Okay.
But it's amazing. It's way better than you expect too.
Can I find this on Netflix, or is this has this made it to the?
I think it's on Prime.
It's on Prime. All right, good. I got that
to rent. You can't just watch it yet. Yeah,
it's too new.
I think it's too new. It just came out like, I don't know, 4 or 5 months ago.
I do need some recommendations, because I need to download. Legally.
Yeah. Yeah.
I need to legally
procure.
Let me make sure. Let me be clear, audience. I need to procure.
We don't condone.
No. Mm-mm. You wouldn't steal a handbag.
I can't.
Kids, ask your parents about the "you wouldn't steal a handbag."
But yeah, I know what you're saying, and I've thought about this too. And this is what I'm going to be doing for most of my day tomorrow, probably,
for our
procuring media.
Well, I'll be sideloading them onto my quest for my airplane.
Sure. I always like to have them too. For you never know about. You know, I'm sure the
internet might go down.
Yeah, exactly.
You never know.
I'm in a strange land.
Communication infrastructure. Coronavirus takes everything over.
Right. I gotta
have some Apollo 13 on demand.
Yeah. I'm gonna ask Tyrell. Have you seen Jojo Rabbit?
No.
Okay. Damn it. was hoping one of you had.
I know. If Willow was
here. Willow didn't join us today. Yeah. She had to go.
You could talk it up.
We'll wrap it up.
Next time.
Yeah, because her and Joseph were talking about it. And,
okay.
And she said it was much better than she had thought and thought it just wasn't what she had expected.
Yep.
Yeah, I hear that a lot.
And that's a fascinating, you know, scenario, I think. That's a fascinating time and it's fascinating to think about getting stuck in that.
Yeah.
You know, right?
Just the I don't know the actual plot of that, but just anything surrounding World War II is by default.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, like, did you guys see when Valkyrie came out?
Mm-hmm.
Watching that in theaters. Oh, have you not seen Valkyrie?
Wait, Tom Cruise?
Tom Cruise.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This is way back. This is back when I saw movies. Yeah. 10 years ago.
I had to like associate.
Go way back. No. When Valkyrie came out.
World War II in color. Like, that's a great documentary.
And just me being on the edge of my seat, the whole going like, they're going to fucking get Hitler.
Yeah.
And I know that's not actually what's going to happen. But it's just like, I love anything World War II.
But you're there. You're in it and you're feeling how urgent we need to get this guy there.
And even pretty much any movie set in that time period immediately gets me some baseline of, okay, I'm invested. I'm in 100%. Doesn't even have to be that good of a movie. If it's set in World War II, I'm in.
Some welding goggles or something.
You're in a bad spot there. You got the sunlight melting your face hole.
We're at the point in the podcast where I don't get to see for the rest of the episode.
Actually, this is exciting. We're at the point in the year because it's been a while since this happens.
Yeah,
Usually at this point in the episode, it's dark outside.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah,
and
that's
the sun,
true.
And the fucking sun is out. Let's celebrate that.
Yeah, we need to celebrate it. Yeah. So,
did you guys miss out on sun last week?
Really? Oh,
dude,
so much.
For the past,
don't
even,
no.
I feel like past months, dude.
Yeah, oh, man.
Yeah, all
so
it does
much,
is rain
so much sun for me.
Also, Casey, fuck you.
Also, when I think of Puerto Vallarta, for some reason, I'm instantly thinking of Wheel of Fortune, because that's the only time I heard of people going.
And they win a thing.
They won a trip to Puerto Vallarta
via
Wheel of Fortune. So related,
that's
to,
how we went.
Not really. I wish. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Related to my departure.
Mm.
Isn't it fun when so just
we're gonna talk about actual coding
I think we're gonna talk about work and like it's
programming related.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
It's so basically I'm helping someone we're supporting with a
I was trying to keep the effort out of your eyes.
With a library.
I'll just do this the whole time.
We've got a library that we're relying on to do some data manipulation that is not providing us the feature set we need.
Would that be the old OGR to OGR?
That's the one.
Damn it. Ah.
So basically what's happening is for some reason when we're trying to do some data munging from GeoPackage and consuming them and putting them in Elasticsearch, it's fine with one, but when you try and put another in there and be like, oh, hey, put this one in there too, it's not wanting to receive it for specific file types. And so we'll do some debugging. We got some debug time. We don't have to have a live debug. I love these are my brothers in the trenches.
Yeah.
They instantly, like, I saw them start to think and be like, well, have you tried?
Yeah. You see me debugging?
Oh, yeah. Everybody started debugging.
Yeah.
So we can do that later.
Okay.
We can. I think we can knock it out in like 30 minutes with a beer on Sunday sitting in an airport.
Deal.
But what I wanted to talk about was that feeling when you feel like you've built a Rube Goldberg that relies on other libraries, because you're just like, okay, this library supports all of these things. This library supports all of these things. And then one element
for Blake
in that
and the other JavaScript developers in our audience, this is a feeling that's a bad feeling for us.
Yeah,
yeah.
We're not accustomed
to
this.
That. Yeah,
we don't know this as a part of daily life.
Yeah.
Yeah,
AKA it's been a week since I NPM.
I just
installed.
NPM uninstall and NPM install the different better one.
And NPM's like, hey, 15 of these are broken. I fixed one of them for you. The rest of them, Sucks to be you.
Yeah, P.S. Yeah,
they all have one critical vulnerability.
Yeah, yeah. But NPM audit fix, baby.
Yeah.
Never works for me.
Yeah.
Never. What? It's never fixed one thing.
Well, it fixes the security errors. It just, unfortunately, your app is now no longer.
I've never all the even dependencies had it, shifted I've never underneath even had it. It fix the security error. Yeah. It's always just like, yo, dude, I couldn't fix that. Like, maybe you should try.
NPM audit. Oh, you know why it doesn't do that?
No. Okay. No, otherwise I would be okay. It would be working.
Right. It's really going to be learn. The simple. I'm
let
excited.
Us do.
Let's learn.
Let's so, get around, you have
to,
children.
Yeah. You have to sudo NPM. No. Fix.
Dash G.
Fuck no, you don't.
Never sudo NPM. No, never sudo NPM, never sudo pip.
Don't just sudo. Just don't
sudo. Yeah. Ask yourself, or what That's am true. I doing wrong here?
Yeah.
Like, how have I gotten at this...
Yeah.
Horrible dead
Why am I at this juncture where I need to sudo something?
Yep. Yeah.
Because you probably don't.
Yeah.
You don't.
Why do I need God mode to convert this to lowercase?
Yeah. You don't. So the reason it does that is because of the way your package.json, like the dependency is tagged for that. So it won't bump it above, like if you have the caret or the squiggly.
Okay.
Depending on that, it won't bump it above that. Like right. so if it tells you to manually do it and you go bump it one minor version or whatever, it might fix it. But it won't do that for you.
Yeah.
You will have
That's what it wants me to do. That's what it's been asking me to do.
Yeah.
I'm scared to fucking go into the JSON, the package.json.
Learn to love
it. No, I know. I get in there. I like to write my own NPM commands in there and stuff.
Yeah.
Like it's deployment to deploy our front end to S3 that.
It should say that, though. Like, hey, mind changing some squigglies to
carrots?
Yeah. Yeah. You know what?
I guess I was supposed to interpret that.
I think that's fair. That's totally fair.
Yeah.
It doesn't, though.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Well, I mean...
Because, like, Rust would be like, dude, you paste this. Copy and paste this in there.
Yeah, let me tell you how to do your job is what Rust would do. Yeah.
Well, because this is why one of those audit tools is kind of a dangerous thing. Because if you do that and you don't pin like a maximum version, and you just upgrade to the latest everything, like you might resolve the security errors in your tree of dependencies, but now all of your actual implementing project code
may. The
dependencies have shifted under it, and maybe they were breaking changes. Of course there were breaking changes to JavaScript. I did something ridiculous the other day.
Oh, Blake. I'm so excited right now.
Yeah. I think I know where we're going on this one.
I did something so asinine that you're just going to think I'm an idiot. I tried to run code that was written 18 months ago.
Oh, yeah.
Who does Shame that? On you. Who does that? Shame on right?
you. Yeah.
I was like, here's some code. 18 months ago, it worked. I would just like to run it now.
Yeah.
And it was a React Native project.
Yeah.
And Expo was like, okay, boomer. literally, the error message is, tell the developer of the app you're trying to run to update their Expo SDK version.
Yeah.
And I was just like, are you fucking kidding me?
Which he sent to me. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Well, he knew what he said.
Yeah. I mean, it literally said, you might want to talk to your fucking trash developer and tell him to, and then it does, like, Expo in their docs is like, hey, look, we maintain 6 months of backward compatibility.
Yeah.
I was like, are you 6 months, Blake? Yeah. Well, that's not long-term support.
Hang on, though.
Has anyone ever built a JavaScript app and had to support it for more than 6 months?
But React Native is not even version 1.0. Like,
that's true.
You're using some...
That doesn't mean that...
That's what you're signing up for.
That doesn't mean half the mobile store isn't built on it.
That's right. We have to sign up for it.
It's also 100%.
You don't, though. Yeah. You don't. You could write an Android and an iOS app.
Yeah. Well,
you could write an Ionic app.
I'm not a heathen.
Oh, okay. You too. You do it.
You built one.
I have.
He updates his Expo version every
I know
months.
You are, but what about
not an Expo app.
So obviously, if this were an actively developed project, we would keep the dependencies up to date, but it wasn't, and I just wanted to run the damn thing.
And the
mess of getting it up to date was just like...
Oh, just wait till you have to upgiate the actual React Native version, which is a giant pain in the ass. I had to do that
as well. I had to upgrade, like, it was seriously, like, almost 10 major versions of Expo in 18 months.
Oh, yeah.
And I had to go through version by version, and Expo does have a change log of every version of the steps to upgrade, and it was like, oh, man, when you go from this version, we moved from a .babel file to a babel.js file, move your config to a module export over here, and then two versions later, it's like, oh, you're still doing that? What the fuck, man? Change it to we use this now.
Yeah.
And so I had to go through version by version to get it all updated, and I did finally get the damn thing to compile and run.
Yep.
But it's just so foreign to me, the idea that code that in Python land, code we wrote 18 months ago will still run.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no the tool chain doesn't move so fast that it's like, oh, we can't even execute this code anymore, because there's almost nothing in between the source code I wrote and the interpreter. There's dependencies behind it, but there's not things like Webpack and Expo and stuff like that all in the middle, or Babel or Transpo, all that stuff that is actually in between your interpreter and your source code in JavaScript land. That was the fundamental realization I had. I was like, oh, I never really thought of it that way.
Yeah.
There's shit in between my code and the and like the in front of my code,
right?
Yeah,
I'm used to having stuff behind my code and my dependencies, but in JavaScript land, there's so much stuff in front of my code, and that's where actually my biggest complaint comes with that ecosystem.
And I would argue though that if you wrote an app in just regular React, and in 18 months you tried to run it, it would work. And I would argue,
it would
be the same.
Yeah, because we've
worked on that project before.
Few apps
that's true.
I think
that is an Expo and React Native.
It is. Yeah. And I have also felt that pain. I'm excited though for when they get to like 1.0, 2.0, et cetera. I think React Native is a really good project, and I think it's a good thing.
It is without a doubt a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I can say that confidently.
Yeah. Like,
there is almost no real. Or there are very few valid use cases now where you can really justify building a mobile application that is multi-platform
in two different code bases.
Unless you need just absolute low-level access to the hardware. And even these days, more and more, that's less of something that you need.
Yeah, right? And I would say even
you
in those cases.
You can still dive into it.
Even in those cases,
write a little bit of Java for your Bluetooth.
Because React Native, the interop with the native code in React Native is not super hard to do. It's pretty fucking easy.
Yeah.
Like if you can get in there, if you need to get in there, write Java or Objective-C, you know, whatever. It's not that bad. It's not really a complaint because I actually kind of like Objective-C, but like I'm surprised they're not doing like Kotlin and Swift. I think that's got to be coming, right?
I would imagine.
So.
Yeah.
It's a big rewrite.
That's a big rewrite. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
My total Everything naive else is. Yeah, right. Yeah, they rewrite the whole damn framework every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
My naive assumption there is that I guess this is totally naive. I shouldn't even make an assumption. I should ask someone who knows more than me, but is everything you can do in Swift in feature parity with what you can do in Objective-C? Mm.
I don't know for sure.
Considering that Swift came afterward and was kind of.
I believe so because
I don't want to call it a bolt on.
Just wholesale adopted it, and they're like, "This is the way."
It's not like a superscript. Or anything.
Okay, okay, it's not like that.
It's
your Swift is not transpiled.
No,
Swift. This is the way.
Yeah, Swift is not the TypeScript of Objective C.
See, I mean, honestly, that's a good way to put it. That was actually my question. Was it along that line?
And Kotlin, I would say, is similar. Like Kotlin is the way. That's the way they're going.
That's actually extra surprising on the Apple side, because Apple's always first one to cut off something that they think is going to be dead in 2 years. Like, it's gone. Fuck it. We don't have floppy drives
anymore.
Yeah, but
the fact that they support Objective-C still is impressive.
Yeah.
But I don't think they do that with technology. I don't think they do that with developers.
With development. That may be true.
Mm-hmm. I think they support that kind of stuff a lot longer than they do. Like,
actually, that's a really good point.
Floppy disks and USB.
Oh, and 32-bit apps.
Yeah, literally all of those things.
Yeah. And I guess, like, think about if you guys were old school Mac folks and you remember the transition from classic System 9 to OS X, to OS X, OS 10. You had a reverse compatibility mode. It was essentially a VM that ran for like 3 or 4, maybe up to 10.4. You had compatibility mode that you could run classic apps in. So that's true. And that was like supporting a totally fucking different architecture.
Mm.
This was like, at some. Well, no, that's when they dropped it. Yeah, it was PowerPC. Yep. When they switched to Intel was when they dropped it because they couldn't support the other architecture. Mm-hmm. But
so, kind of a different subject. I don't know why that conversation made me think of something else, but it did. Mm-hmm. Have you guys ever had the feeling you're reading a job posting and someone sent it to me, mm-hmm. and so I was reading it over. And I was, and it sounds good. It sounds good. It sounds good. And you get to the bottom, and it says, "The app is written in Ruby on Rails." And you just, and you're like, you just close the tab.
Yeah, 100%.
Because you just can't. I mean, you can't. Why? Why? You can't Rails? And it's a no. Come on, man.
What is? I'm gonna say. I agree. I don't. I would never. I had never wanted to. I did that in the past. It's been a while since I've looked for job postings. Yeah. I don't want to spook the team here.
Yeah. Well, we all
I was not on
postings.
Indeed this morning looking at job postings.
So I was not looking, but so I know people that are looking, and someone sent it to me.
Right. Mm. But I guess what I'm saying is it has been a while, admittedly. I've been running Lofty for almost 6 years now since I've been on the job market. But I do definitely at that, I went through that. And it wasn't just Ruby on Rails.
But it wasn't Rails.
No, definitely PHP. Even worse is like...
I would have noped out on Rails.
On PHP. Like it had had I done that and I got to the bottom and they're just like, "Oh, and by the way, it's Laravel." And I'd be like, "Ah, ha, ha, totally. Never mind."
I'd be like, "I'd argue you get 7 weeks of paid time off and you get a personal assistant and your own office and this and this and this."
Yeah.
And like it's just sounding pretty sweet. And then it's a WordPress job.
So can I ask,
fuck that shit.
I want to ask a question, and I'm sorry if this upsets some of our listeners, but
okay, I was ready. I was looking for things to throw, but I'm not a listener, so it's okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry if this upsets Tyrell too.
I have things now.
Okay, in the year 2019 or 2020, if you are starting a company, why are you writing your app in Rails?
Oh, you're all right. Man. You're good.
It just seems like, so. You know, totally separate from my. Lukewarm feelings about Ruby and Rails.
Yeah,
I feel like you're just like painting yourself into a corner.
Totally.
Because as a language, Ruby is becoming more and more niche. It's harder and harder to find people to write Ruby.
Yeah, I know. I've read an article about how Ruby developers are some of the highest paid developers right now.
Makes sense.
It's just a scarcity problem.
Like COBOL.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Whoever thought Ruby would be COBOL?
Yeah.
Like they're polar opposites as far as languages go.
Yeah.
And yet their scarcity makes like huge demand because so much of the modern web is built on Rails.
Yep.
So much.
Yeah. Well, and I would use the air quote modern web.
Right.
Right. Sure, because it was when the concept of modern web, because in a certain way, that is how I feel. This is going to upset some listeners. I'm coming over to your side of the camp here. It's sort of like web 2.0. Like we're going to build a crazy cool tech startup. Got to get some of that Rails shit that I heard about 10 years ago.
Y'all
got any of that Rails?
Yeah.
You know?
And I'll even like confirm the bias. This was 2017 at Strange Loop. I was running with some guys and did one of the, no.
Literally running.
Actually this was coming back from something else. I think it was the City Museum thing. I was talking with a dude, and he works for Strava. I was like, "That's awesome!" And he was telling me what he did. And he's like, "Yeah, you know, this and that is a Rails app." I was like, "You kidding me? Strava's a Rails app? Y'all building that on Rails?" And then I instantly felt like a jerk. I'm just like, "I've just attacked everything you hold dear. I'm so sorry. Please hire me."
There are surprising. Actually, there are surprising apps that are written on Rails. And it's not that
for a little while, everything that was modern about the web was a Rails app.
Instagram's on Rails. Instagram's Rails.
No, Instagram was Django.
Django, my dude.
Yeah. Okay, there was another one. I knew it was either Rails or Django.
Twitter started as a Rails app.
Yep.
They can rebuild Twitter for zombies on Rails, thanks to Greg Pollock.
Yep.
Who will get to see at ViewCon.
I'm jealous of that.
I'm gonna go like put my hand on his shoulder.
I'll be like, touch.
I'll be like,
This is for Blake. And then I'm going to run.
Yeah.
It was like before the mobile craze,
yeah.
Right?
Oh,
so
yeah,
I'm trying to think of who the unicorns were before the mobile craze. Like Uber was pure mobile, so this was Uber wasn't even. But and a bunch of things you didn't hear of. Like lots of small startups, some who made it and got absorbed by other things. Yeah. Rails apps,
like GitHub was Rails.
GitHub, Simply GitHub, Measured.
GitHub. How do we just laugh that off? GitHub is a Rails app, or at least it was.
It was. It's, I don't know. If
it's, I seriously thought it was.
No,
it is now.
Shit, it's probably
anything C-sharp. Back in Java anything of now. That scale
or C Sharp that Microsoft.
Well, was
it?
No,
it's probably Java,
and Brad probably a dozen other things, right? Anything at that scale. There's some Rails in there too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like Dribbble is Rails.
Okay.
Which Dribbble's awesome.
I
don't know.
That?
Is that your drip? Is that you talking about your drip now?
No.
You guys don't know what Dribbble is?
No.
It's like a portfolio for designers.
Are you saying Drupal?
Right?
No, Dribbble. Like the ball, Dribbble.
Yeah.
It's
I have no idea what this is.
With three B's instead of two.
Well, that makes way more sense. Now I know what you're talking about.
Now I know why I couldn't find it.
It's like a.
You didn't say three Dribbble.
It's like a place where designers just show off their work, and it's a great place to get like if you're doing UI or whatever. It's a good place to get inspiration.
Okay. That's good to know.
It's Pinterest for UI designers.
Yeah, pretty much. It's really nice. Way to put it? Yeah, it's
or,
nice.
Or kind of like JS Fiddle, sort of.
Maybe
not quite as much.
There's no code.
There's no code.
Well, then I will never.
But they are like.
I need a place to copy and paste. copy something to paste something. That's how my UI works.
There's this YouTube channel that it's called the key framers. So you know how in CSS do a keyframe and
and like lots of anime
over
graphics
and they take these Dribbble animations and like that's their thing is then they create them in CSS and JavaScript. It's pretty cool.
I do like doing some of that in some CSS, like the little timer that we made for 11.
Oh yeah. Doing CSS transitions.
I think animations are really fucking hard, dude. Like
they're difficult. Yeah, they are. Yeah. You're actually doing math at that point.
Yeah.
You're writing code and you're like, I need this to be a sine wave, I think.
Yeah.
To produce the transition of animation that I want.
Mm. Yeah, and like the Bezier curve.
Yeah.
Bezier curve of like making it feel smooth, but like man,
not abrupt, not linear.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Linear, isn't it weird that linear things just feel off?
Yeah,
it just feels.
It depends on what you're doing, right? Yeah. There are specific contexts in which linear work, but like, for the most part, it just we've gotten it's accustomed like to the. You know, it's like if the acceleration of your car were linear, that's a very unfriendly driver.
Yeah.
Ease on the gas, then punch it, then slow down before you get there.
Right. Yeah.
I don't want my acceleration to be constant from beginning to end.
It's almost like we're so good at like recognizing patterns that if it's linear, we immediately recognize that it's
polish. It's like a sense of polish.
Yeah.
It's like one of those things. I remember when I was in high school, and at this time, digital video was a thing. But we were doing video editing. So this was like the digital video tapes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Firewire, if you know what that is. Kids, ask your parents about Firewire. you could make the tape deck play from the computer. You hit the play button on there and it would play on the tape deck.
Kids ask your parents about tape decks. And
I just remember like searching and I don't probably at a library because I don't think there was much internet content on this of just how to we would make films, short films, and we did a bunch of video stuff. And it was like, but how do I get it to look like a film? Because digital video didn't look like a film.
Mm.
And I had no idea how to articulate what it was missing. Right. And it was actually a combination of things. It was actually a combination of the glass, the lens, the depth of field. But actually, the most important thing was the frame rate.
Yes.
Digital video is 30 frames per second.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Film video is 24.97 or whatever it is.
Right.
And you could actually, if you had video editing software that changed that frame rate, suddenly you got that cinematic quality that just came out of it. And higher frame rate video actually looks better.
Yeah.
Right now that we're in the world where it does. No gamer would touch anything less than 120 hertz. And do you remember when True Motion came out on TVs and 60 hertz?
It doesn't look like a movie.
It feels weird.
But it does look better. The animation is better. You see more and stuff like that.
But it is weird. It's like they're popping out of it. Like going faster. I'm doing it all the time on our new TV.
For real. There's modes you can turn on that is just like, hey, dumb this down so I can watch it like a normal person.
I remember the first time.
So I can get over this person looking like they're popping out of my TV.
I don't want to see Tom Hanks like that. He looks really old right now.
That's like
which makes me feel old.
We watched Angels versus Demons in 4K. I was like, oh, Tom's about to die. Oh no.
That'll be a sad day. You need to watch Apollo 13 before it happens.
Agreed.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we're going to make that happen. Yeah.
But it's like that. It looks better. It's higher quality, but it feels weird. And I remember the first time I saw like 60 hertz content on a TV, and I was just like, I don't like it. Yeah. I don't know what it is. And at the time, I was like, it looks like I shot it on my little hand camera.
Right. Yeah.
Because that's what digital video looked like. It was higher frame rate.
It was like a soap opera. Yeah. Everything looked like a soap opera.
Yeah.
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 And it almost like you could feel like the environment. It was like, I can tell that that's not real. Like, looks cheap. It looks like something.
I can see too much detail in the set.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
And I bring all that up to say that is my argument towards what you're saying. That is like, we actually get conditioned to the quality of something and that translates into polish. Mm. Yeah. And so when it doesn't have that condition thing that all film has, you see something different, even if it's actually much smoother motion, we go, that doesn't look very professional.
Yeah.
But that is changing, right?
Yep. Yeah, it does.
And like, what's his name? Lord of the Rings director.
Peter Jackson,
like when he went to do The Hobbit, he was like, this is the fucking future. We're doing 60 hertz. We're doing 60 frames per second video. And everyone was shitting over it. And he's like, no, this is like, people are like, but it looks like crap. And he's like, it doesn't. You just wait. In 20 years, I'll be a visionary.
I remember reading articles about people getting sick, like watching it in the theater. They weren't ready for it. Like, it was too much detail that I guess.
Yeah.
So the other day, I watched Inception again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too.
Really?
I wonder if it was the same day.
Is it because we talked about all of our weird sleep issues and that got you thinking about it?
Oh, man. I love that episode, by the way.
Did she? Yeah.
Loved it.
I have an update on that. I did go to the doctor after our talk.
Yeah.
Did you do a sleep study?
No. Fuck that.
But anyway.
Is
that an offline update?
Yeah. Inception. You watched Inception the other day. Yeah.
And that movie is really good.
Yes,
and
it is.
I had forgotten how good it was.
That's not an update. That's an absolute truth.
I had been a long time. And so I was like, man, this movie is really good.
That was one of those ones. It was purely one of those situations I talk about where Alyssa's just like, I'm going to put this on as noise. And then we were going to go somewhere to like Lowe's or something. And I was like, nah, I kind of got to see it through now.
Yeah,
Do you guys remember growing up and being a teenager in the 90s? And having to live through, but amongst that cloud, do you remember?
Well, I vaguely
do you remember having to live through the transition of fucking just loving Leonardo DiCaprio?
Yeah,
because that was a hard thing to live through.
It was hard.
Because we were also after it Titanic, like, it was like you have to as a young man growing up in the 90s. Yeah. I felt very compelled. Maybe not everywhere, but where I grew up and where I went to school was like you have to hate Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah. Diaries and all that. I have always liked him.
I was told to hate him by all of my peers and everything around it, and then I had to live through like, but he's fucking fantastic.
I remember we watched that Romeo and Juliet they did.
That was in the Hate Romeo stage. Yeah. That was in the Hate Leo stage.
My English teacher
so good.
In like 9th or 10th grade made us watch it. And she, I remember her, she was a hippie back in the day, as most English teachers were of that era.
That is
right?
A true story.
Yeah. So she was cool, obviously, but I remember her like going like, okay, now there's this one scene, where they do a drug called ecstasy and, you shouldn't try it. You shouldn't do that. But other than that, and then
yeah,
presses play on it, and here we go.
Yeah, you know? Killing yourself is okay, kids.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The guy that plays Mercutio in that is amazing.
Yeah, he does a great job at that too. Yeah. Fuck.
He's such a good actor.
Yeah.
And
yeah, he was in Oz.
Dude, that guy is I don't know his name.
My brain is blowing up and I'm trying to remember.
He was in Lost too.
Well, no, it's not that. I'm actually trying to remember the character Mercutio.
Mercutio was Romeo's a best friend of
his cousin, I think, actually.
He was not a Capulet.
I don't even know if he was related. He may not even been.
Was he not? I thought he was a cousin.
John Leguizamo was my
John Leguizamo. His character.
He was the Prince of Cats.
Fucking boots that
dude.
And he stomps out his cigarette
at the gas station. Damn it! I'm gonna have to go watch that movie.
I know.
I watched it like 3 months ago. I'm so glad we had this.
And fucking Claire Danes.
Such a safe space. Claire Danes, bless her heart.
So yes, and at the time. I was still being conditioned like it, but I'm glad that you didn't live through that. But for me, it was very much I had to have. This was not the first time I had a conversation. I was like, but Leonardo DiCaprio is actually pretty good, right? Mm. I had that conversation as a late teenager with friends.
When did he win the Oscar?
Was it for Forever?
It was Revenant.
It's Revenant. Yeah,
it had to be stolen by a bear first.
Yeah, and that's the whole fucking movie.
Yeah,
which is great. I loved it. I loved it. Yeah, I love those kinds of movies where.
Win an Oscar for a crime movie with Marky Marks in it. Oh, damn it. I can't remember the name of it now.
Wait, Marky Mark and...
DiCaprio?
They were in Basketball Diaries together.
No, that's not what I'm thinking of. Hang on.
But yeah, no, that was his first one. Because
Departed.
The Departed.
No, he didn't win one for
that. That was fucking fantastic.
That's a great movie with the Jack Nicholson in it. And, yeah. But that was dude, the scene going. With him and Jack Nicholson is so great. I love where he's kind of like Jack's confronting him about being a rat. And then Leonardo's trying to snow job him. And when he drops, Jack Nicholson's character drops the gun on the floor, he's like, what, you think I'm an idiot? He's like, boom, oh, and then picks it up and is looking at it like, how's this thing work? Oh, yeah, I think you're a cop. Ah, such a good movie.
That was when we were, that was when why hasn't he won an Oscar yet?
Exactly. Yeah, I can't believe they didn't win an Oscar for that.
Yeah, and I think it may have been some of that.
Yeah. Fucking that Django?
You were supposed to hate him.
Oh, yeah.
Django Unchained. Django Unchained. Yeah. His character
which
is fucking
made
Django?
It really fucking hard to Google Django problems for a while.
We finally got through it.
I finally purged it from the top of my suggestions.
I want
I'll still get Unchained.
If you're too vague, you will. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think...
Is Django good?
He had to fight out of What's Eating Gilbert Grape and Basketball Diaries.
What's Eating Gilbert Grape? And, I had my junior high teacher made us watch that.
He had a handful of stuff he had to fight off of.
Why? Yeah.
He had to go from,
Wait.
Well, it's in the same way that we had to learn to love Joaquin Phoenix. We hated him for so long, and then That's we learned true. To love him.
He was a bastard in Gladiator.
Man. Everybody hates
That's
him.
That's true. That character made
it ruined him.
He was just whiny. Don't they love me?
But you know what?
Don't be a whiny bitch.
I made a reference to him today, actually. Yeah.
He won me over in Signs, though. He won me over in Signs.
Signs was so...
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Signs
relatable.
Is a movie I don't like, but I like
another
it.
So a recent Signs. Good one of his scene was the one where he played an artist who had a drinking problem. He got into a car accident. Right. He was in a wheelchair and he did these comics for a Portland newspaper for years. Kind of a cult icon. Huh. But he did that and played that part, and as far as being immersed and you kind of forgetting that it's Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah.
It's a really great film.
Joaquin Phoenix,
I wish I knew the name of it.
That is apparently my celebrity doppelganger. I've been told that many times.
Huh. I can see it.
Yeah. I can see it too.
Yeah, it depends on what state of disheveled his beard is. And my beard.
If the lighting's right.
It's the nose and a couple other things, but I've had multiple people tell me that. Yeah. I looked it up, and at first I was like, we had to power through it, and I was like, fuck that shit. And now I'm like, I'm cool with that. Yeah. As long as it's not when he was like on a really fucking crazy bender with the crazy hair on Letterman. That was that. I don't want to be that
like around Phoenix. The Her era.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe a little bit before.
I fucking
that.
Love that movie.
Yeah. I still haven't seen that one.
Oh, that's really good.
I haven't seen that one either.
I'm into anything with ScarJo. She's like. She's
your hall pass.
Yeah, and has been since I was like, you know, since she first started making movies. I don't know. ScarJo does it for me.
I had this kind of, we're gonna save this for the patrons.
Yeah,
because we got to wrap this up.
Yeah, that's true.
Someone bring all this together with something.
Well, I have to ask one question though, because it's come up a few times.
Let's do it.
About Basketball Diaries, like. Uh-huh. Do you guys not like Basketball Diaries?
I have not seen it. this is my refrain for the whole thing. I haven't seen that.
I got a DVD one time that I thought was going to be something else. Somebody was like, yeah, here, you can borrow it. And Basketball Diaries was in it. And I never watched it and was just like... So it's
this
like
this was supposed to be Chasing Amy. And I opened it up.
So unfortunately, I kind of have a bad taste in my mouth that has nothing to do with that.
I think it's it's kind of like if I understand. Yeah, because I also haven't seen it. Real talk.
God damn it.
So, but what I understand of his role would be similar to Jared Leto's role in Requiem for a Dream.
Hard to like him in that movie.
And so, in the same way that we still really haven't embraced Jared Leto, like, he's fought his way out of a lot, but he's not like, everybody loves Jared Leto. It's everybody just like, Jared Leto's a good actor.
One of the best parts was seeing him get the shit beat out of him in Fight Club. Yeah, I just wanted to destroy something beautiful. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
No one says they love Jared Leto. People will say, like, he's a pretty good actor. But no one's just like, oh, man, Jared Leto,
I'm a fan of 30 Seconds to Mars.
I have a guilty pleasure. I have a guilty pleasure for that one song off that album that we played one time.
And so that's where I would say when people reference DiCaprio and Basketball Diaries, it's probably a similar connotation to that kind of role.
Because when I saw
it is a tainting role.
I see.
I saw that when it first came out, and I was probably like, man, I was young. It was like 14-ish, probably, maybe 16, in that range, definitely. And like that was the first thing I saw with DiCaprio in it, and I liked him immediately. I have liked him ever since then. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really good. And I've liked Mark Wahlberg since then too.
Yeah.
But it was just a good story. Even if he like is a shitty character.
Right.
You know?
Well, but that's the thing.
I may have to go back and watch it now.
With that character.
Because I love Requiem for a Dream, even though it's tough to watch. It's tough to watch, but it's a
hard
great,
watch. That's I've
a,
seen it's a many great times.
Fucking movie.
That's a shower movie if they're
for
oh,
sure.
Yeah.
That
no.
is a shower inducing movie.
I'm pausing it.
Okay.
We gotta close it out. We're gonna
right. okay.
But here's the deal. Right. If you want to hear us talk about Leonardo DiCaprio movies, you should come to our Patreon and join us. Because we're gonna take this. If you don't know, we record the interest for the show separately on a separate track. We released that for our patrons on Patreon. We're going to take this discussion there. Thanks for hanging out. We'll
talk
to you.
We really go on tangents.
Yeah, you think this is tangent filled. Wait till you hear the intro recordings. So we'll see you on Patreon, and we'll see you in a week.
Thanks, right. guys.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening to Friday Afternoon Deploy, recorded and produced by the team at Lofty Labs. If you enjoyed the show, you can subscribe to future episodes via iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. You can also follow at Friday Deploy on Facebook and Twitter for episode previews, live streams, and other behind-the-scenes peeks. Past episodes and show notes on this episode can be found at friday.hirelofty.com. That's friday.hirelofty.com. If you'd like to contact the show, or if you're local to the Northwest Arkansas area and would like to be a guest on the show, you can email us at podcast@hirelofty.com.